Welcome to Savor. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Kelly.
Today, we are going into a topic that was actually provided by one of our Savor listeners. Karen shared an article with us about all these new devices that are out there for measuring our data. In this day and age, we are measuring quite a bit about ourselves. We measure our calories, our miles ran, we measure even where we're spending our money. We have apps such as Mint that can let us know what's showing up on our credit card and what places we're purchasing things. We have really useful devices that measure how much gas is in our car and lets us know when we need to go fill up. But today we're seeing more and more devices and apps that help people measure their body temperature, their blood pressure, how many steps they go in a day, how many calories burned, and how many calories eaten. We're going to be discussing, is this helpful? Does it actually make people healthier to be keeping track of all this data? Or is this really detrimental to somebody's relationship with their body? Does it lead to obsession? Does it lead to really over-quantifying ourselves? Before we get into this very relevant discussion, we want to do a shout out to a group that we feel is doing some really positive work in the world. It's actually a website that is called Cat and Dragons, and it provides a list of health professionals that have a health at every size approach, and are, in other words, also accepting of all different body sizes, whether somebody is small, medium, larger, somewhere in between. These health professionals are saying that they are not weightist and that they see somebody as their unique individual. And the really other neat thing about this website is it's the consumer who are listing these health professionals. So it's not necessarily someone going and putting themselves on this website, but it's somebody who's actually gone to see this person, this doctor, this dietitian, even a yoga class, and they've said, hey, I felt really comfortable going to this place or this person, and I felt accepted. So the website itself is actually a little bit long. So if any of our listeners are interested, you can Google Cat and Dragon and Google a fat acceptance health professional, and you should be able to easily find it and use that as a resource.
Great. Super excited to be talking about all of this today, Danielle, and I'm glad that you found that resource for our listeners. Well, so let's talk about some of the different apps that people are using these days to quantify themselves. We're talking about Fitbit, MyFitnessPal, the Daily Plate, the Daily Burn, the Nike watches, the things that you put in your shoes. The list goes on and on and on. I don't know if you can think of any other specific ones, but I think people have an idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. I don't even know about some of those apps you listed.
Yeah. So, everybody's using them these days. I mean, pretty much everyone that has a smartphone that you come across, they probably have an app on their phone for something to track. I actually have recommended some of these to my clients. Maybe not necessarily the food ones, but for instance, there was a mood log tracker that I used for a while, and I might have mentioned that here before, but it was really helpful for me. So I do think that there are some apps we can use that could be helpful, and I think that there are some that might not be helpful, and as you and I discussed this today, maybe we'll come up with the pros and cons of different ones.
Yeah, and just to provide more awareness about these apps. Mm-hmm. I think that it's very easy to download them. A lot of them are free and to create a login and start to keep track of things, but maybe not everybody is really critically thinking about how the app impacts them in their daily routine, their overall health, and their overall opinion of themselves.
Right. So a couple of years ago, I think it's been 3 years ago now, my parents came to visit and my mom was working on some stuff with her nutrition and she had found the app, or at the time she was using it on a website, MyFitnessPal, and she was logging into it and she gave me her password so that I could keep track of her food and give her feedback about what was going on. And they came to visit and my dad was doing it as well. And they were keeping track with each other. Did you log in that meal? Did you log in? And we were on vacation. And so we were eating out a lot. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're trying to figure out, where did we go? What was that? So I downloaded it just to see what it was all about. And my experience with it was interesting. So the first thing that was interesting to me was how it calculated caloric needs. And in my experience with a lot of people that have it, often the caloric needs are a little low for people. And if people are wanting to lose weight, I think it tends toward a lower calorie level than is necessary and could even maybe slow down someone's metabolic rate. Just the ones that I've seen.
So these apps, generally you're just putting in a height and weight, right?
Height, weight, age,
And sex.
Sex, activity level, different things.
So, and then from there, they calculate your calorie needs.
And you also put in whether you want to maintain weight or lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then they generate a number. So in my experience, the ones that I've seen, the calorie levels are typically a little lower than would be necessary because they don't know anything about you. You know, mm-hmm. if somebody is eating 4,000 calories a day and they want to start losing weight, you know, they could probably eat 3,500 calories a day and start losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a calculation might put them at 1,500 calories to lose weight.
Wow.
But then they're going to be starving all the time and that's going to set them up for dieting failure and yo-yo. So anyway, that was my first experience with it, kind of looking at the calorie level that they were recommending. And I used it for just a few days and, it was torture. I felt like a crazy person. And I'm not a crazy person.
I can vouch for that.
It was exhausting. I mean, I make most of my food from scratch. And so trying to, you know, figure out exactly what I ate, what I put in it, how many calories that would be, coming up with recipes, whatever you do, it was really annoying to me. And then all day long, every time, you know, here's your meal, here's your snack. Oh, wait, did I put that in my Fitness Pal? Whatever. It was really exhausting. Just one more thing that I didn't really have time for in the day. And then at the end of the day, when you put submit entry or something like that, it said, if you continue eating like this, you will lose blank pounds in blank days, or you will weigh blank by this date.
Wow.
Or another day, if you continue eating like this, you will not lose any weight. If you continue eating like this, you will gain weight. I mean, every day it gave you a different message.
Wow.
At the end of the day about what you were doing.
Wow.
It was crazy making. Crazy wow. making. And I just decided that's not something I really want to be doing with my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just in a conversation with my friend about this week because a year ago, she had tried to use that to track her food. And she told me this week that she felt like a crazy person too, that it was, mm-hmm. you know, numbers focused and all about you're doing a good job or you're doing a bad job. And just, she felt very judged and it wasn't a pleasant experience for her and something that she doesn't want to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had clients with eating disorders who have been doing fairly well in their recovery. And then they get hold of one of these apps and, you know, even if it's all with the best intentions to start with,
mm-hmm.
you know, being overly focused on numbers like that and tracking and counting everything has really put them into a tailspin.
Wow.
In their recovery process. Mm-hmm. It hasn't usually landed so great.
Mm-hmm. Does that suggestion at the end of the day when it says, if you continue doing this, you will, does it ever say the person's going to die, you know, if you can't, you know, if you're only eating so many calories a day that eventually you're just not going to make it.
I have seen,
or you're going to faint or.
Right. I have seen one time where a client was grossly under eating for the amount of activity that she was doing. And it did caution her, you are under eating, you should eat more,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't really list out the health risks or anything like that. The other time where it's been a real problem is for adolescents, mm-hmm. because adolescent calorie needs and protein needs are so great. It's a time of growth and development, and that isn't really accounted for very well, in my opinion, on those mm-hmm. apps. And so for adolescents, it will really underestimate what they need, mm. which could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I noticed when researching this topic, just again, how people are getting health information from apps or from forums and blogs, and it's, and they take it as truth, you know, in a way, as that this is coming from an expert. And, you know, again, like everything you're saying with this app, how it's telling somebody how much to eat, like that's really, really important. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's, I mean, we wouldn't ask a stranger to tell us how much of even an over-counter drug maybe to take, or a prescription type drug, or, you know, other things that we go to our doctors and nurses for. But when it does come to food and exercise, we're very open to taking guidance from others and from this app. And I think it's tricky also, because when something portrays itself as like a fitness pal or as a nutritional guide, there's an assumption that, well, there must be somebody, you know, behind the curtain who is a nutritionist, who is directing this and who has looked over all these charts and whatnot and said, yes, this is valid, this is a good suggestion. But really, that might not be the case at all, that this information is really coming from a pool of information, and it's really generalized. And it's not even, again, like you're saying, taken into account someone's developmental stage or health status. It's extremely general. I was alarmed when reading some of the forums on MyFitnessPal, how people were giving food advice to others. Someone would say, I want to lose weight, or I want to gain weight. Here's what I'm doing. You know, it's not working. And people just poured out suggestions. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just scary to me, especially because some of these people could have eating disorders potentially.
Right. Yeah.
Or other health risks, you know, medical risks they could have as well.
Right. Yeah. I read a quote yesterday that said something to the effect of, everyone thinks they're a nutrition expert because they all eat.
Yeah. So. You know what? That makes sense. Yeah. So, I mean, it even goes to the exercise suggestions that are given as well, that in some of these apps and some of these like Fitbits and devices that people wear in their bodies, there is default settings or kind of default suggestions. And so we've seen a lot with the 10,000 step mm-hmm. rule, that should be a goal per day for somebody to walk 10,000 steps.
Right.
And I was looking into that a little bit more, and it really, I mean, everything points to that this is a myth, that there's really no scientific evidence that you should be walking 10,000 steps a day, that all people should really be walking this amount per day, that it was something that came about around actually 40 years ago in Japan, when they were making their own pedometers and trying to get people to start wearing them. And they came up with this number of 10,000 steps. And really, the idea of 10,000 became more of a marketing tool for the pedometers that they were trying to sell. And it carried over into the United States when we started to have our own devices here that were being marketed. And it's today still being used as a recommendation. So it's just interesting, once again, that, you know, these suggestions about health are put out there, and it seems to be widely accepted. People don't question that or say, hey, does my body need 10,000 steps a day? Does that really work for me? It becomes a goal for mm-hmm. them.
Yeah. So again, very generalized, not specific for what's actually going on in our body. And we're talking a lot in our podcast about savoring ourselves, savoring the moment, savoring our bodies, what's actually happening, checking in, going inside. And all of these are external measures of what's going on, which is one of my concerns with using these types of apparatus and applications. One of the things that you shared with me that was very interesting was this quantified self movement. And you even found a TED Talk about this. And it's a movement where people are tracking as many bits of information about themselves as they can. So down to temperature, heart rate. What else was
there? Yeah, calories, sleeping,
diapers,
yeah, caffeine intake, alcohol intake, just really anything that we can keep track of now with the advancements in technology, people will keep track of. And there's actually meetup groups for this. It's communities of people who really find this important.
Mm-hmm. And why is this necessary? Can you think of any reasons why these things would be necessary or how they might be helpful from your perspective?
I'll speak to what I was reading about and then I'll share my opinion. But I was listening and reading and there was talk of how it can be useful for the person's health professional to be aware of these things if they have to make a diagnosis or if there's medical things going on, or even for prevention of future health problems, that having kept track of this, you know, various forms of body information might be useful in that sense. The TED Talk that we were listening to as well about the quantified self also brought up the idea of self-knowledge and that it's just another way to really know more about ourselves. And there wasn't the question of, is there anything wrong with that? It was really, the message there was, you know, of course that's good. Mm-hmm. You know, who wouldn't want to know more about themselves? I also found it interesting that through some of the other blogs and articles I was reading, there was reference to historically keeping track of ourselves, and that people have done this in diaries and even through, you know, forms of photography, that we've been keeping track and collecting information. But now, again, with the advancements of technology, we have just a myriad of information. There's just types of information that we can now quantify and log about ourselves. So I have mixed feelings. I also briefly used my FitnessPal. I think mine was a half a day that I used it. And I was, so I guess to give a little background to why I downloaded it, my husband and I recently got the Vitamix and loving it, using it every day. And one of the things we started to do is almost every day having a smoothie. I'd make one for the both of us. And I thought I was putting in enough proteins and fats. And I knew that smoothies generally, you know, aren't probably enough for a meal. And so I was really trying to load it up with different things that would taste good and also make us both feel full and give us energy. And so I had gone about a week where I noticed every day I was just feeling really hungry, and it didn't make sense to me because I thought, hey, I'm eating healthier. I felt like overall I was taking in more from using my Vitamix and different things I was making with it. And so I thought, well, if I calorie counted, you know, I could maybe figure out, maybe I'm not getting enough calories in a day. So I downloaded the FitnessPal, and right away I noticed that the default setting was to lose weight, which I was really annoyed with because I didn't have that goal at all. It wasn't even about weight. I just wanted to know what I was, you know, bringing into my body. And I actually changed the setting, and I noticed the next time I opened it, so I changed the setting and it changed my caloric, recommendation for the day, which I agree was way too low. I was like, I know that's probably not enough for me. And then the next time I opened the app to put in a meal, it had lowered it again. And I was like, that's weird. Why is it so low? And I went back and it default set it to lose a pound a day or lose a pound a week again. And I was like, why does it keep changing? So that whole thing was strange, and it could even be my own, novice, you know, use of it. But, so I put in like a breakfast, snack, lunch, and I get to another snack. And similarly, as you were saying, I was just so annoyed with it. It took so much time. Like I just, oh my gosh, it was, it was annoying. But I did find something useful about using it that day was that my smoothies were actually too low in calorie. So no wonder I was hungry. I needed to have a sandwich or something else with the smoothies. Mm-hmm. And, it really wasn't enough for a meal. So that was helpful for me. And I after that, I deleted it. I was kind of done with it. I was like, I got what I needed. I'm good. And so in that sense, I can see how some of this information could be useful to really see, hey, I am not getting enough, or wow, I am taking in more than I realized I am in a given day or for a, or a given meal. The whole thing with these restaurants and food places being forced to put their calories on thing.
Yes.
I was really against that from, you know, the beginning. And I, you know, especially coming from the eating disorder health profession, I was like, oh my gosh, my clients are going to go crazy, you know? But when I brought it up in conversation with people, I saw that some people were actually benefiting from this information. So people would go to a restaurant, they'd order something, and once the calories now were put on the menu, it really gave them a greater awareness. They had no idea they were sitting down to a 1500 caloric meal, 1800 caloric meal, and it made them aware and they chose to order different things. So I could see the benefit. If you don't realize that sitting down to some of the meals at some of these restaurants, that you're actually taking in quite a bit. And it could also have play a role in even listening to your body too, that you might look at the menu and be like, okay, I want to eat this. And you get this huge plate of food in front of you. You get the smell, you see it, you know, it's pleasurable. And I wonder if that does have an impact on your body being able to tell you what it needs in that moment, that you might think, hey, I'm still hungry. I want more. I'm going to keep going. But there's all this different type of stimulation that I'm wondering if it does, kind of muddle those messages, and that people might end up taking in more than their body needs that moment. And not just that moment, because we know that taking in more now and then is okay, but every time going to restaurants or eating out, if this continues to happen over and over again. So that was a long explanation. What are you thinking?
To this restaurant calorie thing. There's really probably, like everything else, a gray area. Because as I'm listening to you, I'm sort of disagreeing about some things. You know, restaurant meals are typically more calorically dense than something that we would make in our home, right? And, you know, that's one of the reasons why it's better to eat at home more often if you can, and prepare your own food from fresh ingredients if you can. You know, that's definitely a wonderful way to be healthy. And so for people who do eat in a restaurant frequently, I think it's helpful for them to know that information. You know, like if I made this turkey sandwich at my house, it might have a blank number of calories in it. But if I ate this turkey sandwich in a restaurant, it might have, you know, three times that amount of calories in it. But I still wonder why people aren't checking in with themselves, because it seems to me that when I eat in a restaurant, there is a point where I know this is enough food for me. And just because there's a whole plate of food that looks good or tastes good or smells good, I know that I've had enough. And I was just on vacation with my friend, and we went to this amazing restaurant in New Orleans, and I had something that I hadn't eaten in a really long time, and it was just so delicious. And I was like, oh, I just want to keep eating this. It's so delicious, but I don't need it. I can have some more of it later, you know? So it wouldn't really matter what the calories were on the menu because my body was giving me information. And I think the more we're relying on these devices and applications, we're becoming less reliant on our body's cues. And just like people who are eating out every day or every meal, I would think that there would have to be some point where your body just didn't feel well. Because when I'm on vacation and I have to eat out every meal, I can't wait to get back home and have regular food that I cook for myself. And so where is that disconnect? I don't know. I just feel like it's, I feel like that information is not necessary. I mean, could it be educational? Yes, but it's just one more. And then also, what if somebody goes to a restaurant and their favorite food on the restaurant menu has 2000 calories, and now all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, great, I can't eat that ever again. And then they order a salad or something that they're completely unsatisfied when they finish. you know, versus, wait a second, is this a supportive decision right now that I'm at this restaurant, it's my favorite restaurant, I come here once a month, once a year, and so what that this thing has 2,000 calories? I really want it. I'm not here very often, so I'm going to order it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to eat whatever portion of it is that I feel satisfied by, and then I'm going to be finished. You know, I just think it's externalizing a lot of things.
Yeah.
And even with your example with the smoothie, it's interesting too, that you just felt like you had to, well, let me see how many calories is in my smoothie and if this is enough, instead of just thinking, well, gosh, I'm still hungry. This obviously isn't enough. I'm going to add something to it. You know, so we rely on external things.
Yeah.
That's and what... I know that you're usually really good about that. So it's interesting to me.
Well, yeah. And that's what I was, when you were talking, that's kind of what I started to think about too, was my smoothie example of how I didn't really trust my body. I was like, huh. Like, I mean, the first couple of days I was hungrier, I did eat more, but then it just kept happening. And I was like, well, is something wrong? Like, why would I be hungry? And it just, it just struggled with seeing what I was doing in my, you know, with movement and food and putting it all together. And so for me, that numerical information, the caloric intake of the smoothie was like my aha moment of like, well, oh gosh, you know, and afterwards I had a like a duh moment. And I think I was even talking about it with a friend and they were like, yeah, smoothies are, you know, are not a meal. And I was like, I know they're not a meal. And I did have other things I was incorporating like around the smoothie, but I really, I needed like another kind of entree, you know, to go with this. And so, and interestingly enough, you know, my husband wasn't using it as a meal. Like he was, it was a snack for him, the smoothie. So, yeah. And so maybe even having these tools at our fingertips kind of impact the level of trust with our body.
Sure.
So that I knew I could figure this out through an app, through this tool. So I didn't have to really sit with it or start to trust my body without this kind of numerical information. I could rely on something external.
Or what if you then, what if, let's say you had plugged in your smoothie recipe to MyFitnessPal, which was based on a completely generic calorie count and estimated needs, and it told you it was fine. You were having enough, but you were still starving. And then you were going through your day feeling like something was wrong with you. And that happened to my sister once. She was doing some diet and keeping track. And she called me up and she was like, Kelly, I'm, my sister's a nurse. She's like, I'm an hour after breakfast, I'm like having low blood sugar and I feel like I'm going to faint and I'm dizzy and I'm shaky. And I'm like, eat more. I mean, just because this says that this is what you're supposed to do and you're doing the right thing, your body is clearly telling you that something is not right, you know? So maybe you can use it for a piece of information, but just like when we weigh patients and we tell them, this is one piece of information, you know, your number on the scale at this point in time is only one piece of information, but we're also looking at your feelings and how you actually ate and how you exercised and what's going on with your labs and, you know, this whole other body of information and these applications and apparatus, they're only one piece of information. But I think people really rely on them and take it as the gospel. So I would also like to mention, Danielle, that we are, we're really focusing on MyFitnessPal, but there are multiple other apps and websites that are doing the same sort of thing where they're calorie counting. So it's not like we're just targeting that one, and the same sorts of issues would arise for each of those. But even other things like the Fitbit and I don't even know what they're all called, but I know there are things you put in your shoe and there are things that you put around your wrist and there are things that you put around your forearm. There are a lot of different ones.
There's the Nike Fuel Band. There's Jawbone Up Body Media Fit Link Armband.
Yeah, there's the one that you can get at 24 Hour Fitness. I can't remember what, Body Buddy or something like that. Interestingly enough, one of the treatment centers, a really great treatment center mm-hmm. in the country, actually, they do use that body band and mm-hmm. they monitor their patients' activity levels throughout the day. And when they're in their rooms at night, when they're supposed to be sleeping, they can see if they're up exercising or mm-hmm. not. So that's one way that it could be used for positive. But anyway, so these things that you put on your body, and they are measuring things like respiratory rate or your temperature or your pulse or things, those should technically be more accurate in what's going on with you at that moment in time and what your body needs. So maybe that would be less of an issue, that it's overestimating, but it's still, in my opinion, disconnecting you from what's really going on and making too much of a focus on numbers. And I'm not sure why we need to be so worried about running around counting calories in and calories out. And in our podcast a couple of weeks ago with Eating Disorder Awareness Week, and when Allie was here and she was sharing about her challenge that she put together for the 24-day positive mm-hmm. body image challenge, there was that quote that said something to the effect of, "Surely my life's work is not about counting calories."
Mm-hmm.
And really, I mean, I'm sorry, but I have way more important things to do every day than be hooked up to a Fitbit or my fitness pal and counting things at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might be booked up for 12 hours or not. And when I get home, maybe some time for self-reflection or to journal mm-hmm. or to do some yoga or to connect with a friend, you know, mm-hmm. I would much rather be spending my time doing that mm-hmm. than counting whatever app I'm using at the moment.
Well, I think that these companies are, it's another for-profit way to get people to buy something that'll help them lose weight in a way. I realize not everybody who uses these things are trying to lose weight, but it is an obsession in our society to be thin. And even this whole fitness thing is still, it's still an obsession. It's this idea that if you look fit, that you're somehow healthy, and that's a desirable way to look. And there, we were talking about how keeping track of what you eat may have some effect on people's weight. And I think that that's part of what they're banking on, that mm-hmm. by keeping track, people will make adjustments and they'll get the goal that they want, which I think in a lot of cases is a form of weight loss. You were telling me about the weight registry earlier.
Yeah. So there's something called the National Weight Control Registry Database, and it's a huge database with, you know, tens of thousands of people, and it keeps track of people's weight loss data. And so when did they lose the weight? How much weight did they lose? How long did they keep it off? And it's the largest form of information of that type that we have. And, you know, as we've discussed before, dieting for the most part doesn't work. 95% of people who lose weight gain it back. And then some, usually. And so what this registry has done is they have examined the 5% of people that have kept their weight off for X amount of time or longer to see if they could find some commonalities.
Mm-hmm.
And, the three that I'm remembering off the top of my head is that, one, they eat breakfast every day.
Mm.
Two, they do physical activity. I believe it was 3 or 4 days a week. And then three is that they do keep some sort of food journal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what those people had in common. So yeah, maybe it does keep you on the right track. But then again, is that what you want to be spending your time doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Keeping track of your food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess it comes down to someone's value system, what's important mm-hmm. to them in mm-hmm. their daily life. The other thing I noticed on these websites that promote these devices is the way it is their marketing. And so I think that's another way they're really showing the intention, is that they're trying to help people either lose weight or become fit. And they market, interestingly, to people, like if you look at their ads on their own website, mm-hmm. all the people are, I would say, a smaller size, you know, mm-hmm. thin, fit. Nobody was a larger person on their mm-hmm. website. So that sends a very strong message. They are also really encouraging of comparing, you know, all the social media aspects of everything we're talking about, which we haven't even touched on yet. And just that, you know, this information people are getting about themselves, it's not just for themselves. Mm-hmm. There's this whole component of making it public. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these devices have the social part already built into the system. And mm-hmm. so you easily can have a public profile where your food is posted, your accomplishments are posted, your goals, and so on. And it's both, they talk about to encourage people praising and saying good job, but also competition. You know, there was even one of the commercials for the Fitbit where it looked like a husband and wife were comparing their Fitbits at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And then the wife got up and ran around the room a couple more times in order to have the same, you know, steps or beat her husband's steps.
That's so horrible. It's not normal behavior.
That's true.
Yeah. Running around the living room so I can burn a few more calories today.
Yeah.
That's not normal.
I agree. I was watching it and I was just like, wow. That's really kind of sad. I mean, it's, yeah. And then also there's almost this compulsive checking of the data that mm-hmm. I noticed throughout all these websites where they're showing people constantly looking at the device. So a funny thing that I was remembering as I was looking into all this. So for the eating disorder class I teach at UCSD, I think I'm going into... this will be going into my fourth year of mm-hmm. teaching it. And from the very beginning, I've had this diet lecture and I found this picture, I think on Google Images a while back, like over 4 years ago. And it was a old magazine ad for a scale that could be put into the seats at a diner. Mm-hmm. And so it shows a woman sitting at a diner, looks like it's like 1950s. And then there's, it shows her weight on the table. And then it's to allow the person to see their weight change as they eat their meal at the diner. Hmm. And so it was kind of like mm-hmm. a joke, kind of funny, you know, thing that scales and everything, right? And so I show it as a funny thing. Like, could you imagine if, like, everywhere you went, you know, your weight was in front of you, and as you ate, you watched your uh-huh. weight change? And I mean, wouldn't that just make you crazy? And now, I mean, that's kind of what these devices are doing. I mean, you could, you know, you're sitting there watching your calories go up or your steps go up or your weight change as you're going throughout your day. It's and even some of them are designed to show you that, to show like, oh, when you eat this, this is what happens to your body.
Right.
And so you want to maybe change or not change. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, you're talking about this and I'm thinking about that treatment center. It's the International Treatment Center mm-hmm. in Sweden, and they have one in Australia and I'm not sure where else. But with their patients, they actually do put their plates on a scale.
Oh.
And then while they're eating, they're hooked up to a computer and they're watching the weight of the food consumed and then tracking their hunger and fullness. It's very bizarre.
This is for eating disorders?
Yeah.
Oh,
you don't know about that?
No, I don't.
We'll have to talk about that another time.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
That's, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is quite the biofeedback.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I'll definitely want to learn more about that.
Speaking of biofeedback, there's the diet bra.
Yes.
And again, there's no right or wrong. Maybe there are shades of gray with everything. But when we were first talking about the diet bra, several people were all up in arms about it. And I think even you were like, this is just another diet tool or something. And the person who blogged, I read it from a news article. You read it from a blog of mm-hmm. a health at every size person. And of course she was mm-hmm. saying negative things about it.
She was also pointing out that this is obviously just marketed to women.
Yes. But there are reasons why mm-hmm. that was the case. So when I read it, so the diet bra is a bra and it has a sensor that measures your heart rate. And so in a sense, this is a type of biofeedback because what the intent was, is that when someone is getting anxious or stressed out or having some negative emotions, their heart rate is going to change. And if they could have that information, then maybe they would not go do the comfort eating or the emotional eating. Mm-hmm. So it was a biofeedback kind of tool.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, I think that it would be best if we could all learn those things about our body and just be naturally in tune. But in therapy, people use biofeedback mm-hmm. as a tool to learn how to manage their anxiety, mm-hmm. right? Or neurofeedback to manage anxiety mm-hmm. or obsessive thoughts. But it's a tool that you use, and I don't think that you have to continue being hooked up to the device forever. Mm-hmm. You eventually learn what's happening in your body. So I could see how the diet bra could initially be a type of biofeedback that mm-hmm. you could start to learn about yourself. Oh my gosh, I'm getting worked up. Mm-hmm. I didn't even realize it. And now I'm going to go reach for food and do mm-hmm. emotional eating.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that sort of way, it could be a really good tool.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that it wasn't for men is because they hadn't gotten a device created yet that could accurately measure.
Mm.
So the bra is right by your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really easy for them to measure it, but they hadn't found a device yet, like mm-hmm. underwear or something that could accurately measure the heart rate and give mm-hmm. you that same sort of biofeedback.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's actually out on the market though, right? Couldn't they couldn't find a battery
yeah.
that would sustain for yeah. a whole day.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not there yet, but anyway, you know, so there could have been good things to mm-hmm. it and maybe not so great things to mm-hmm. it.
So in a way though, could that speak to what we were talking about earlier about having information about food you're eating,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it be like calories, for example, and for those who don't know yet, you know, they're not able to tune into their body yet.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, fair to say that it could be useful to have some more, to use some of these devices for information about what you're putting into your body so you can learn to start to connect, oh, okay, this is fullness. Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, this is the size meal I just had. You know, this, these foods I'm noticing are making me feel sluggish later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, yeah, not eventually get off of whatever device is being used, not using it forever, but using it as a transition to learn more about your body and reconnect with your body.
Right. I mean, anything's possible, right? That we could do anything. I mean, for some people, yes, for some people, no. And I'm probably a little more sensitive to this because of the population that I work with most mm-hmm. of the time. And my clients are not usually clients that are going to respond well to
yes.
the numbers and counting and things like that, yeah. you know? And so I would be much more, I mean, with almost all of my clients, when I start out, I am having them keep a food journal, but it's a paper and pen, so you're more connected to it. And it's got, you know, it's not just, it has zero, it doesn't have any calories on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It has time you ate, what you ate, what you wanted to eat if it was different from what mm-hmm. you ate, what you were doing while you ate,
mm-hmm.
how you felt physically, mentally, what were your thoughts, what was mm-hmm. your activity level. So it's looking at all sorts of other things going on in your body besides counting calories. So I'm just a little hesitant too.
Yeah.
Because people don't know unless you have someone helping administer this for you. I can come up pretty close to how many calories my clients need a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within probably a 5% range,
mm-hmm.
but I'm trained to do that,
right.
you know? And so if you're just doing it yourself or you're just
right.
getting it off of some app, you know, who knows if that number that you're coming
up
with is right.
Yeah.
And education point that people don't know a lot of times is that our bodies burn different amounts of calories every
mm-hmm.
single day
mm-hmm.
by sometimes up to 800, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you're having your period,
mm-hmm.
you're going to burn more calories. If you have a fever, you're going to burn more calories.
Mm-hmm.
If you cut your arm, you might
mm-hmm.
burn a few more calories,
mm-hmm.
you know? So there are a lot of external factors. So
mm-hmm.
yes, I suppose people could use it as a tool to start to get in touch and just to be more mindful.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I used that mood log,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I used a mood log for a couple of weeks and it was a really cool little thing. And then you could write notes, like it would track your mood and then it would assign a number of mood for you, and then it would give you a little inspirational thing. But then you could write a note about what you were doing that day. And within just a couple of weeks, I noticed whenever I do blank and blank, there were two very specific things, it negatively affects my mood.
Mm.
And so I just used it for a couple of weeks. And then I was like, okay, there, I'm good. Now mm-hmm. I know that whenever I'm doing those things, mm-hmm. so maybe I should choose not to do them
mm-hmm.
if they're going to make me feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you have the ability to just use it as information for a short period of time,
yeah.
it can be helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, with using some of these tools, also with some support, like maybe professional guidance or someone who has the professional knowledge to guide you as you're interpreting all the data. Like even the biofeedback, like the diet bra. I mean, I think you would also need somebody who's telling you, okay, your heart rate is going up. You know, this could be anxiety, stress. You know, here's how you can bring that back down and mm-hmm. how you can calm yourself down. Because mm-hmm. I don't think everybody would necessarily know what to do with that information and how to apply it to their life in a healthy way.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
The other piece that could potentially come out of using these tools is the obsessions with it. And we see that with the eating disorder population. And that's why we're both wary of using these type of tools, because it easily can spiral, because they're already really susceptible to becoming obsessed with these numbers and quantifying things. One of the quotes that I came across in the articles and blogs I was reading was a woman who was saying, I hack my relationship, my learning, my kids' education, my body, and my house. Often with the experiments that she attempts, she to just let the data be the thing. It's easy to get mirrored in emotions. And then the writer goes on to say, so instead of getting agitated about her weight gain or marital spats, gathering data insulates her from their emotional power. And I really believe that is true, that these things can be used as a distraction from what's really going on in somebody's life. And so if you can focus on numbers and you can have this sense of control over it, then it makes you kind of feel like you can change it, or that you actually do have control over it. But
mm-hmm.
quite a bit of things in life we don't have control
right.
over. And sometimes we need to connect with the emotions. A lot of times we do, in order to, again, reconnect with the body and ourselves and get a better assessment of what we actually might need in mm-hmm. that moment or in a given day. So let's wrap up. What's our overall pro-con list from these devices?
That's tough. You want to take the pros?
I guess I had a couple more in mind. Sure. I think that with most of the time professional help, that some of these tools can be useful to make healthy changes in somebody's life. That it can be potentially a way to reconnect with the body. Again, usually with some type of coach or guidance. And in some cases, I do believe it could be a way to, if someone does have a medical problem, it can be a way to rule things out and prevent future potentially medical or health problems by looking back at some of the information. Potentially.
I just thought of a really good example of going with what you just said about
okay.
medical problems. So we have now, for people with diabetes, we have continual blood glucose monitoring systems
right.
where
yeah.
people can be hooked up to pumps
mm-hmm.
and their blood glucose is being taken. The insulin is being administered as the blood glucose readings are coming back. And even a step further, they can keep their food in that. And that can get transmitted to their physician. And then together with their physician and dietitian and the logs, they can see when I'm doing this, this is what my blood glucose is doing, and this is what I need to do with my insulin or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that case, it's a wonderful tool.
Yes, that's
and,
true.
And, you know,
yeah.
such advancement in science
right.
and medicine
yeah.
that we didn't have before.
Right. That's very true. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah. So I guess we can't, you know, technology is supposed to move us forward. So we can't always just throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what are some of the disadvantages?
That, you know, I think it can lead to obsessions. It promotes this fit diet industry that we know is a billions and billions of dollar industry that's not always leading people down the health of path, the path of health. And then also you say it's a way that they can reconnect, which I suppose they could, but also in a major way, it's disconnecting. It's relying on external cues instead of internal.
Some other cons that we didn't really go into, but to briefly mention, is also where all this information is going. And so with some of these apps and devices, you can allow your information to go to a data collection server. And so they're making databases off of everybody's information, and which again could have a health benefit of, you know, creating prevention models and treatment models. But it's a lot of private health information that's just going out there. Additionally, you know, worst case scenario, it could start to impact insurance companies or impact even the relationship with your doctor. You know, they're seeing what you're doing every day. And so when you come in with a health problem, they say, well, maybe because you ate this or you didn't exercise.
Right.
And so I think that starts to get a little bit tricky. And if that could happen, or if insurance companies could start to say, well, we want you to keep track of things, and if you have good numbers, we'll lower your premiums. So those are kind of worst case scenarios, I would say.
Right. So it's a gray area, and it's a personal choice if people want to use these or not.
Right.
But hopefully if you do have, we didn't talk about this. If you do have an eating disorder, especially you're working with your healthcare professionals to decide if this is really helpful or not helpful. And for our listeners who do have eating disorders or are in recovery, we would like to promote two such apps. And one of them is called Recovery Record, and the other one is called Rise Up. And you can track your food intake for the day, as well as your mood, as well as your behaviors, and hook it up to your practitioner's account. So it's another way of keeping track and accountability and getting positive feedback, but it's not focused around numbers and fat grams and exercise and things like that.
Right. And it has coping skills already listed into the app. And it has, it does give you like achievements, and it tries to encourage you to reach your goals, but it's quite different than these other ones.
Yes.
It's like, yes, you followed your meal plan today, you know, praise and good for you. And
then one of my favorite treatment centers, Center for Discovery, you were just telling me, Danielle, that they created their own app for their patients to be logging and tracking. So there are some good uses for these types of things.
Right. We want to thank Karen once again for sharing her idea with us. Our other listeners are always welcome to share ideas or topics or give us feedback at info@savorpodcast.com, or also post on our Facebook or tweet us one of your ideas. So this week, we want to ask our listeners to savor your body's messages.